Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. The official death toll in Gaza tops 42,000. This is Democracy Now!
The West cannot hide. They cannot claim ignorance. Nobody can say they didn't know. We live in an era of technology, and this has been described as the first live stream genocide in history, and I believe that to be true.
That blew me away.
Al Jazeera investigates war crimes in Gaza, based in part on videos filmed by Israeli troops themselves, which they post on TikTok, Facebook, and other sites. We'll speak with the Al Jazeera documentary director Richard Sanders and journalist Yumna El-Sayed, who is based in Gaza. Then we'll be joined by the acclaimed Palestinian photographer Motaz Azeza. He repeatedly risked his life to document Israel's war on Gaza.
Imagine to open your eyes and witnessing a new Nakba, get displaced, lose your home, and lose your friends, lose your family.
Plus, we go to Florida, where more than 5 million people have been urged to evacuate as Hurricane Milton barrels towards Florida as a Category 5 storm. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's military has once again invaded the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza, its third such offensive in the last year. The Palestinian Red Crescent Society says the assault has left dozens of people dead or injured as soldiers, quote, fire at anyone who moves, unquote. The Palestinian Ministry of Health reports Israeli troops surrounded the Kamal Adwan Hospital and gave medical workers 24 hours to completely empty the hospital of patients and staff. Israel issued similar orders to the Indonesian and Al-Aura hospitals. The orders threatened to collapse the healthcare system for an estimated 400,000 Palestinians who remain trapped in northern Gaza. In central Gaza, mourners gathered in Deir al-Balah earlier today to pray for 17 people killed when Israel bombed tents housing displaced people in the Nuseirat and Berej refugee camps. This is Raghab al-Khalidi, who carried the body of his young nephew, Hossam, who was killed in the attack.
They were sleeping safely. Why are they targeted with two rockets? What fault did they commit to be targeted with two rockets? Why should we have to get them out of the fire?
Israel's military continued its devastating attacks on Lebanon overnight with massive explosions reported in Beirut's southern suburbs and the Baqa Valley. The bombings compounded the misery of displaced families, many of whom have been forced to find shelter in open-air encampments in Beirut's streets.
We fled from the bombing, from the rockets that were coming at us. Our homes were destroyed. Come and see the people who are displaced here. They have been humiliated.
Is there anyone who is not scared of war? Especially that we have a child with us. God help us and God help the people.
Earlier today, Hezbollah said its fighters repelled two incursions of Israeli troops attempting to invade southern Lebanon. Hezbollah's deputy leader Naim Qassem said in a statement the group is prepared to negotiate a ceasefire with Israel. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu directly addressed the people of Lebanon in an English-language video message boasting Israel had killed Hashem Safieddine, who was meant to replace assassinated Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah. Netanyahu warned Lebanon's nearly 6 million inhabitants they could face, quote, destruction and suffering like we see in Gaza, unquote.
Do you remember when your country was called the Pearl of the Middle East? I do. So what happened to Lebanon? A gang of tyrants and terrorists destroyed it. That's what happened. Lebanon was once known for its tolerance, for its beauty. Today, it's a place of chaos, a place of war.
Syrian media is reporting 7 civilians were killed and 11 others injured Tuesday in Israeli airstrike on a residential building in a suburb west of the capital, Damascus. Women and children were reportedly among the dead. Israeli officials claimed the attack was aimed at killing a Hezbollah official involved in weapons trafficking. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says he's written directly to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, warning him against dismantling the UN agency tasked with providing food, health care and social services to Palestinians in Gaza and the occupied West Bank. Two bills under consideration in Israel's parliament would prevent UNRWA from continuing its essential work. Guterres said passage of the legislation would, quote, be a catastrophe in what's already an unmitigated disaster.
Without UNRWA, the delivery of food, shelter and health care to most Gaza's population would grind to a halt. Without UNRWA, Gaza's 660,000 children would lose the only entity that is able to restart education, risking the fate of an entire generation. And without UNRWA, many health, education, and social services would also end in the occupied West Bank, including East Jerusalem.
Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant has canceled plans to travel to Washington, D.C. to meet with his U.S. counterpart, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. Israeli media is reporting Prime Minister Netanyahu blocked Gallant's visit because he first wants to speak with President Biden about Israel's plans to attack Iran in response to Iran's missile attack last week. One of the largest evacuations in Florida's history is underway. After officials urged 5.5 million people along Florida's Gulf Coast to seek shelter ahead of Hurricane Milton's expected landfall near Sarasota this evening. As it approached Florida, Milton once again strengthened into a catastrophic Category 5 storm. It's forecast to double in size as it crosses the Florida Peninsula, triggering deadly storm surges, winds, and torrential downpours. The National Weather Service has warned Milton could be the most powerful hurricane to hit Tampa Bay in over 100 years. Mass evacuations across Tampa and other areas have clogged highways with reports of widespread price gouging as more than 1,000 gas stations run out of fuel. Republican Governor Ron DeSantis, a climate crisis denier, warned people to stock up on food and water and to prepare for power outages that could last weeks. Meanwhile, Florida's Department of Corrections says it evacuated at least 4,600 incarcerated people, including many prisoners who'd been tasked with cleaning up debris following Hurricane Helene. The Manatee County Jail, however, has refused to evacuate the approximately 1,200 people in its custody, despite the life-threatening risks. Early Wednesday, Hurricane Milton churned over the northeast of Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula with maximum wind speeds of about 160 miles per hour. Residents are calling on the Mexican government to help with recovery and to spray against mosquitoes carrying disease. This is a fisherman from Celestun, Yucatan.
We demand support for the most vulnerable people, and above all, to fumigate, because now there will be a lot of illness, dengue, Zika, a lot of illnesses. I would demand authorities not to abandon the Celestun port.
In Bolivia, new data show wildfires have burned a record 25 million acres this year, driven by hot and dry conditions due to the climate crisis. On Tuesday, officials in Bolivia's hard-hit city of Santa Cruz advised residents to stay indoors and wear face masks in open areas as wildfire smoke blanketed the region, triggering air quality alerts. Airline flights were delayed due to poor visibility, while school district officials canceled classes.
We have many breathing problems. This makes learning more difficult because the students have coughs, sore throats, headaches, and itchy eyes. Then it's impossible to hold in-person lessons now.
Bolivia's record wildfires come as a scientific study by the organization Forest Declaration Assessment found deforestation soared last year with nearly 16 million acres of forest chopped down or burned, an area roughly the size of Ireland. That puts the world behind a target for eliminating deforestation by 2030, agreed to by 140 countries at the UN Climate Conference in Glasgow 3 years ago. In Ukraine, two people were killed and more than 30 injured Tuesday as Russian warplanes bombed Kharkiv, Ukraine's second largest city. Survivors say the attack came almost without warning.
I heard that something was flying through the air. I grabbed my child to run away towards the pit behind the building. I sat down and protected her like this, and I heard a shattering sound, and glass shards were everywhere.
On Monday, Ukraine's military said it had struck a major oil terminal in the Russian-annexed Crimean Peninsula. Meanwhile, Russia used a hypersonic missile to strike a major air base in western Ukraine and attack two civilian cargo ships in the Black Sea grain export hub of Odessa. On Tuesday, the White House said President Joe Biden would skip a four-day trip to Germany to respond to Hurricane Milton. Biden had been expected to attend a summit with Western leaders at the U.S. air base in Ramstein to discuss Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's so-called victory plan. Here in New York, one of Mayor Eric Adams' closest allies has resigned from her role as first deputy mayor, making Sheena Wright the seventh senior official to leave the Adams administration amidst multiple federal investigations. Wright's husband, New York City Public Schools Chancellor David Banks, announced last month he would step down just weeks after the FBI raided his home. Wright's resignation comes as Adams' former chief liaison to Muslim New Yorkers, Mohammed Bahi, was arrested and indicted on federal charges of witness tampering and destruction of evidence. This comes as Mayor Eric Adams continues to face mounting calls to resign after becoming New York's first sitting mayor to be federally charged in a bribery and wire fraud scheme spanning nearly a decade. The Biden administration's finalized a rule requiring cities to replace nearly all lead pipes within a decade. Public health experts hailed the move as a long overdue measure to protect children, particularly in low-income communities of color whose tap water is far more likely to contain lead. A recent study in the journal JAMA Pediatrics found more than two-thirds of children 6 years old and younger in Chicago have been exposed to lead-contaminated drinking water. And prominent Palestinian human rights defender Issa Amro has received the 2024 Right Livelihood Award for the work of his organization, the Hebron-based Youth Against Settlements. The group based in the occupied West Bank was recognized for its, quote, steadfast nonviolent resistance to Israel's illegal occupation, promoting Palestinian civic action through peaceful means, unquote. Amro has been detained by Israeli forces several times over his activism, beaten and tortured in Israeli prisons. Other Right Livelihood winners include British Israeli architect Eyal Weitzman, who accepted the award on behalf of Forensic Architecture, which has mapped out possible war crimes committed by the Israeli occupation in the Gaza Strip and Palestinian territories. To see our interviews with Eyal Weitzman and Issa Amro, visit our website, democracynow.org. The other Right Livelihood Award laureates are indigenous human rights and environmental activist Joan Carling of the Philippines and Anabella Lemos, a Mozambican environmental activist. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, Al Jazeera investigates war crimes in Gaza, based in part on videos filmed by Israeli troops themselves and posted on TikTok, Facebook, and other sites. Stay with us.
My face.
water by low. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. Health officials in Gaza say the death toll from Israel's war has now topped 42,000, though many fear the actual death toll is far higher. We begin today's show looking at how Israeli troops have repeatedly filmed themselves committing and celebrating war crimes in Gaza. Al Jazeera's investigative unit has just released a documentary on Israeli war crimes based in part on social media posts from Israeli soldiers themselves. The documentary begins with the Palestinian novelist Susan Abulhawa, as well as footage of the Al-Auda school massacre in July when Israeli troops killed at least 31 people at a school sheltering displaced Palestinians. The moment the bomb exploded was captured on video by someone recording a youth soccer game in the Al-Auda school courtyard.
The West cannot hide. They cannot claim ignorance. Nobody can say they didn't know. We live in an era of technology, and this has been described as the first live stream genocide in history, and I believe that to be true. They are conducting a genocide now with glee. They're setting their atrocities to music and putting them on catchy reels on TikTok. Ordinary Israelis see what their military is doing and celebrate it.
A crowd is singing, "May your village burn."
It's not just fringe elements who see this and think it's a good thing.
When a nation protects its home, it fights. And we will fight until we'll break their backbone. It's not true. This rhetoric about civilians not aware, not involved, is absolutely not true. It's an entire nation out there that is responsible.
An excerpt from a new documentary on Israeli war crimes made by Al Jazeera's investigative unit. That last speaker was the Israeli President Isaac Herzog. This is another clip from the documentary. We hear from Human Rights Watch's Associate Director for the Middle East and North Africa, Bill Van Esveld. The clips begin with video posted online by the Israeli 202nd Paratroopers Battalion that shows a possible war crime of the shooting of unarmed Palestinians in Gaza. This is a graphic warning.
As troops leave Gaza, they place commemorative videos online.
When they meet the 202nd Battalion, they are going to regret being born.
This video documents the activities of the 202nd Paratroopers Battalion.
Hold this here. I'm going to play this back again. This is extraordinary. The fact that he's put this onto video, he's released this on YouTube, to me is kind of quite extraordinary, the degree of impunity.
The video shows two other instances where unarmed men are shot by snipers.
Of course, I don't know the context of what happened before. I don't know what happened 2 minutes before that. They may have been involved in contacting and shooting at Israeli forces. They may have been legitimate targets, but it sure doesn't look like it to me.
An excerpt from a new documentary on Israeli war crimes made by Al Jazeera's investigative unit. We're joined now by two guests. Yuna Al-Sayed is a correspondent for Al Jazeera, who is based in the Gaza Strip. And Richard Sanders is the director of Al Jazeera's iUnit's new feature-length documentary investigating war crimes in Gaza. Yuna, let's begin with you. As you narrate this film, if you can talk about the video footage that we see that is actually taken by Israeli soldiers themselves.
Yes, thank you for having me on your show again, Emmy. Of course, Israeli soldiers in Gaza taking these videos and posting them on different social media platforms, they've had all the courage to do that because they know that they are not even going to be condemned by posting these videos. They are showing off how much they dehumanize Palestinians, how much they kill, they destroy their properties, they completely torture them and dehumanize them in different ways, whether they're children, they're men, they're women. They brag about it and they're very proud of their doings. And all this comes back to the fact that the Israeli army acts with complete impunity. And they know that even these videos being posted online, they won't even be shown in other Western news outlets to point out how horrific these videos have actions committed by the Israeli army towards the civilians. On the contrary, Benjamin Netanyahu comes out and says, "We are the most moral army in the world," when in reality, they are the most inhumane army in the world. As a journalist, as a civilian in any war zone, I'm supposed to have that guarantee that a soldier from any other place in the world, any other nationality in the world, as long as he carries that term, that definition, that he is a soldier, he must have morals, he must have ethics, that he would not hurt me as an unarmed civilian, as a journalist, as a paramedic. But in Gaza, for them, every single Palestinian, as long as you are a Palestinian, you are a legitimate target.
I just want to issue a slight correction. The person in the first clip that we showed from the documentary was not Bill Van Esveld of Human Rights Watch, but rather Charlie Herbert, retired British Major General. So, Richard Sanders, if we could turn to you. Talk about the origins of this documentary, the fact that it begins with the Palestinian novelist Susan Abulhawa saying we are in an era of technology, and this has been described as the first live stream genocide in history. I mean, in a way, the film itself documents precisely how it is a live stream genocide. If you could elaborate.
Well, thank you for having me, Amy. Yes, I mean, that's precisely why we begin the film with those comments from Susan Abulhawa. The essential point of the whole film is no one can hide. The Israelis themselves were telling us precisely what they were doing and why they were doing it. The film is rooted in these soldiers' videos, of which there are thousands and thousands. And we didn't pick particularly damaging examples. They're all like that. I mean, one thing that's very striking is what you don't see in these videos is combat, or very rarely. There's very little combat. Every now and then you see soldiers expending an enormous amount of ammunition, but they're frequently standing up and there's clearly no incoming. That's what you would think soldiers would want to post online, but they don't. Now, it's not only soldiers' videos, of course, we have in the film. There is Israeli media, Israeli politicians, and Israeli social media. We're not picking, again, as Susan says at the beginning of the film, we're not picking unrepresentative examples. In the West, there is sometimes this rhetoric, even when people aren't overtly supportive of the Israelis, there is this rhetoric of it's complicated, it's nuanced, it's difficult. And what we're really saying in this film is listen to Israelis, Listen to Israelis. They don't think it's complicated. They don't think it's nuanced. Their rhetoric is often overtly genocidal. It's certainly frequently all about ethnic cleansing. They couldn't have been clearer about what they were doing. And if we are ignorant, we're willfully ignorant.
So, Richard Saunders, how do you interpret the fact that these videos were made and posted so liberally by Israeli soldiers themselves? I mean, the obvious question is, to what extent did they think they were totally immune from any kind of repercussions as a consequence of what they were doing, which, you know, if you see those clips that you show in the documentary, are so obviously war crimes. In fact, the international legal expert whom you spoke to said that it's very uncommon to have clips like this. He said a treasure trove, which you very seldom come across, something which I think prosecutors will be licking their lips at. So if you could just, you know, talk about that, how, what do you make of the fact that soldiers themselves so openly, transparently, and widely distributed their own acts that could be construed as war crimes?
They clearly felt this would be popular in Israel. They were competing for clicks, you know, and they were right. These videos were popular. You know, they were using some of the photos they took of themselves on dating apps. So again, and yes, as you say, it speaks to an astonishing sense of impunity. I mean, the clip you've played there, where you actually see unarmed men being shot, that's fairly unusual. But even so, that was put on YouTube by the people who did it. Now, you know, what we very much hope is that this material, and of course there's an awful lot of material additionally which isn't in the film, this material will be of use to the ICC. And it's quite interesting, within Israel, if you follow Hebrew language social media, there's been a panicky deleting of social media accounts over the last few days. But it's too late. We've got it all saved.
I want to turn to another clip from your new Al Jazeera Investigates documentary, when we see Israeli soldiers in footage that they themselves shared talking about the complete destruction of the Shijaya refugee camp in Gaza.
Butterfly Station, this is Command. We're launching Operation Eighth Candle of Hanukkah, the burning of Shijaya neighborhood. Let our enemies learn and be deterred. This is what we'll do to all our enemies, and not a memory will be left of them. We will annihilate them to dust. Command out.
The destruction of buildings is regularly featured, often set to music.
You see huge blocks getting blown up, universities getting blown up.
So that clip ended with Human Rights Watch Bill Van Esveld. Richard, could you respond to what we saw there? And also, you know, what most surprised you as you were researching this documentary? I mean, there's extremely disturbing testimony that we hear, and just a couple of examples. A man who says he was forced to lie on a decomposing corpse, as well as another in a detention center in southern Israel who witnessed a young inmate being raped by a dog.
To be absolutely honest with you, nothing surprised me. It's what I would have imagined was happening inside Gaza. I would say, imagine 40 years ago, before social media and you know, before every camera, every phone had a camera, this would all have been done in the dark. But it, in a sense, it makes no difference, as we say in the film, because they've posted it all online. One of the only thing I would say that surprises me, I'm not surprised that the Israeli soldiers feel complete impunity and so on, but the fact that higher up the chain of command and in the government, they clearly feel the same impunity as well. No one has come down the line and cracked down on this and said, stop doing it. It's quite clear that Israeli politicians and Israeli military commanders feel that they enjoy complete impunity for what they're doing.